This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Speak Radio Show normally airs every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the United States and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. That number again, 1-888-429-5471. This is a very special show tonight. This is part two, talking to our guest, Rebecca Roth, about her best-selling 9/11 novel, taking the research world by storm, called Methodical Illusion. Hey, Rebecca, welcome back to the People Speak Radio Show.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
It is my pleasure, indeed. Reading the book Methodical Illusion, I couldn't help but to notice that one of the characters, Max Hagar, the conspiracist, seems a little bit familiar to me. Did you, by any chance, take the inspiration for his character from the researcher called Max Egan?
You know, I really didn't, but it's interesting that Max Egan actually contacted me about a week ago, and I'm hoping we can put together a project or two in the very near future. I absolutely adore Max Egan. And, you know, Max Hagar, my character in the book, I always say he is kind of a combination. He's the truther's truther. He's everyone that I've talked to, ran across, seen online, and I have followed Max Egan, but I don't know him personally well enough. Now, I have had personal friends of his make a comment that I actually use some of his own terminology and the way he speaks and refers to things. So I'm sure he loved the book. By the way, he did read the Kindle and bought several copies to give away. He's just very happy about it, and we're looking forward to doing a project together.
Awesome. I hope one day you can be on his show, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure we will.
Now, in the book, one of the characters, Vera, is introduced to the 9/11 conspiracy by the photographs that were taken by Kurt Sonnenfeld. Can you tell us a little bit more about who he is and why he's so important to the real 9/11 story?
Yeah, you know, Kurt Sonnenfeld is a real character. And in real life, he was a FEMA video photographer, lived in Denver, Colorado at the time of 9/11, and I know his story. He tells that his unusual story, his boss phoned him around 6 in the morning that morning, and he said that was very unusual because his boss usually didn't show up for work until 9 in the morning. As soon as the first plane hit the North Tower, he was called up and rallied to immediately go to the New York area. He spent about, I think, a month there filming, and he was there just immediately. Now, I don't know the details, if he flew over on a military jet or exactly how he got there, but he did get there very quickly, obviously, because remember, the ground stopped all flights except for military. So I don't know what time he arrived, but he was there for about 30 days. He took some very interesting photographs, and some of the things that he stumbled across, he decided to keep some of the documentation, because I guess it pretty much led to, let's say, the guilty parties. Somehow indicated somebody was doing something they shouldn't, or had pre-knowledge of this, or maybe pointed to the guilty parties involved with the whole event. And so after the U.S. government, FEMA, discovered that there were, I believe it was 29 hours missing that he hadn't turned in, they framed him for the murder of his wife, which happened the following New Year's Eve or January 1st, somewhere with the first of the year, 4 months later. And she apparently had been suffering from depression and was, you know, quite suicidal anyway, but they framed him for her murder. She committed suicide, apparently. And they just sort of ramrodded him through the system. You can kind of Google search Kurt Sonnenfeld and find his story. He's done a couple great write-ups on Voltaire, I think it's called, Voltaire Network or something along that line. And it's a real interesting story how he was denied his rights as an American. They ended up taking him to court, I think, twice, and they just didn't have any evidence, so he was released. He moved to Argentina. He actually went there on vacation, I believe, and then he ended up staying in Argentina, finding out that the feds were after him. Again, they were still hunting him down and gone through and ransacked his home several times, looking apparently for these missing photographs and tapes. And I believe in January, the Argentine government finally gave in to the United States, and they are allowing him to be extradited back to the United States to be, I guess, tried for murder again. I think this will be his third hearing.
Wow. So he's living in exile at the moment in a foreign country.
That's correct. He's been in Argentina. He's got two little girls, you know, maybe they're, I don't know, 5 to 8, somewhere, and they're young girls, to a new wife, has a new life down there. And the Argentine government has been really protective of him since the United States started, you know, hunting him down there. But apparently they just released him in January. So I haven't really... Wow. I've been super busy since the book came out, but I haven't found out if he's here or not. I'm hoping that they stop his extradition, but I'm also, I know in January I sent out a lot of emails to people that are in the movement and the truth movement for the 9/11 truth anyway, to, you know, see if we can't rally some support for him. So I just haven't been able to keep up with his story.
Right, right. Now, last week we heard you say that the 28-page redacted 9/11 pages from the 9/11 report is just a distraction, that you didn't find any evidence of Saudi involvement in September 11 attacks.
That's my personal opinion. It is a distraction, and I think the rats are cornered, and I think most of us know who they are. And every rat hole I went down, every rabbit hole I went down, I didn't find any Saudi Arabian people or government officials, but I did find a different Middle Eastern country involved, and that would be Israel.
I'm sure there are ties with the Bush family and bin Ladens. Salam bin Laden, of course, George Bush's first oil venture called Arbusto.
Well, yeah, the Bush family, because they're involved with oil and the Carlyle Group and the Bin Ladens and the royal family both, I mean, the Bin Ladens have a huge construction company, and it's a huge family, and the Saudi royal family also, these are all, you know, multimillionaires, billionaires, and they're kind of in a club. So, yeah, they are friends. As a matter of fact, George Bush Sr. was meeting with, I believe, one of the Bin Ladens, senior Bin Ladens from Osama Bin Laden's family, the day and the morning of 9/11. They are friends. I just didn't find any trace. You asked me, did I find any? No, I didn't find any trace other than a friendship and an involvement through the Carlyle Group with the Saudi government, which is the royal family, and the Bin Laden family through their construction, because they got a lot of construction contracts for a lot of our military bases.
Yes, that's right. Very interesting.
But other than that, no, I mean, Urban Movers, that didn't go to Saudi Arabia. Zim Shipping, that didn't go to Saudi Arabia. Kroll, that security, that didn't go to Saudi Arabia. Jerome Hauer, that didn't go to Saudi Arabia. Larry Silverstein, didn't go to Saudi Arabia. I mean, I just didn't find any real trace. I mean, other than that, working relationship through Carlyle Group and the
right.
Bush family.
Through the financial ties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you just mentioned Urban Moving Systems. What can you tell me about their involvement and Dominic Suter, who ran the company?
Yeah, that's really interesting. The Urban Moving Company, they're the ones, I don't know if your listeners are aware, that they had these little vans painted actually with the World Trade Center towers on it and with an airplane crashing into it. And they were called in by the police. I mean, the police saw them that morning. There was so much havoc going on. But the Urban Moving Company was renting space, I believe, in the World Trade Center Tower. And isn't it them that left with $50,000 on the table? They left their lease early. I get them kind of mixed up with Zim Shipping. So Zim Shipping Company did this, and one of them left there. But Dominic Suter, again, another non-Saudi Arabian, Middle Eastern a person that just connects to Israel as well. And I think you know more about Dominic Suter than I do. I mean, there's so many players in here. And again, they all trace back to the same area.
A lot of fingerprints of Israel were all across 9/11. Now, how exactly have some of the truth groups reacted to your book and responded? How have the architects and engineers, for example, what did they think of your book?
Well, you know, I've done several conference calls with them because I think they limited themselves so much to just the buildings and the structures falling down and how they did it, that they really didn't know anything about where the planes were taken, how the planes were taken over, what the FAA protocols were, any of that inside stuff. So they've done a brain drain on me 3 or 4 times with, you know, 15 or 20 of them on a conference call with Richard Gage and all of those people. So, yeah, they've been pretty nice. I'm always surprised because for me, you see, because of my airline background, that's where I dug in and that's my specialty. For them, their specialty is architects and architecture and engineering and how the buildings, you know, didn't collapse but exploded or imploded. And so they had their knowledge is over there. So I listened to what they have to say about the buildings collapsing. And for me, I wasn't interested in that. My research, even though I read about it, I read a lot of arguments about it, you know, Judy Woods versus Stephen Jones, and everybody's got their opinion. But really what I centered into in my research was what was really going on inside the planes, why the FAA protocols weren't followed, what could have been happening at certain times during the flights, why they would call the cockpit, why the cockpit wouldn't answer, and so all of that. So I mean, I'm kind of in a little different thing. I know a lot of people want to contact me through email and stuff, and why don't you ever talk about Judy Wood? Well, because Judy Wood wasn't a flight attendant. She wasn't on board the planes, and she's not going to help me find what I wanted to find, which is what happened to the planes, passengers, and the crew members. So right, I can't really argue about all the methods they may have used to take the buildings down.
I've heard you mention about the May 11th plan, about the 5 or 6 city plan. Can you just explain that or go into that a little bit?
Yes, I can. This is really most troubling for me, and so much so that I just created a little, about a 14-minute YouTube on it. So you can go to Rebecca Roth on YouTube. And it's Rebecca with a K. And you can find this. It's really, really simple because people really always ask questions about this. A couple of years ago, I was traveling with my husband, and I just picked up a brand new iPad. I'd never dealt with an iPhone or iPad before, so I really wasn't sure about how to bookmark or do anything other than read. And so I was reading news because I'm a big news hound, and I keep my ear to the news, all of it, and I get it from all over. And I saw this article, and I believe it was Ynet News or some Israeli online news source, and it claimed that the Israeli intelligence had intercepted Al-Qaeda plans. Well, I know who Al-Qaeda is. I've, you know, studied that enough. Hillary Clinton's told us that, you know, we created Al-Qaeda. We did. They were called the Mujahideen in the mid-'80s to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. So I mean, we have seen, most people know that Tim Osman was Osama bin Laden, and he was, you know, a CIA asset. I also found that Osama bin Laden, Tim Osman, had received about $2 billion just in the couple, 2-3 months before 9/11. It's just one of the things I stumbled across. So the article went on to say that on the anniversary of Osama bin Laden's Navy SEAL team death, now most people know that he really died in December of 2001 from his kidney disease, but they would mark his anniversary from May 2nd for 9 days until May 11th using biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons on America, 5 or 6 major cities. Well, now to me, that's really important news for Americans. And so I went immediately back because I'd just been looking at the news. I'm like, how come this isn't anywhere? Well, I read it out loud to my husband. It was shortly, by the time I got home, it was scrubbed off the internet. No one could find it. And luckily, I read it out loud to him because I'm like, 9/11, hear that? May 2nd, his anniversary of his death. I mean, I remember the details of the article crystal clear. And what struck me so shocking was that it wasn't mentioned in any U.S. news agency at all, just in this one Israeli news source. And I got to thinking that since it wasn't in any news source, do you remember after 9/11, shortly thereafter, that the Israelis came out and they said, well, we had intelligence that we tried to tell the United States and we tried to inform the FBI and the CIA, but they wouldn't listen to us. And I got this creepy feeling that this was some sort of forewarning or some kind of message for some date in the future. And then, you know, I started, you know, I'm still digging into all of this stuff, working on a sequel. But then I learned that this is that Jubilee year, the seven-year cycle again, you know, after 2001, 2008. Now here we are in 2015 at the Shemitah year. I guess that's how the Hebrews say that. I've always been mispronouncing it. But this is a year that it easily could happen. So I like to talk about it because people need to be ready for this. Now, 2 weeks ago, I came home, I was unloading groceries, and I had turned on my television set, and it was just on Fox News. So it's not, you know, something I was really looking at or watching, but just kind of listening to see what they're pushing. And a politician from, I think, one of the Carolinas was actually saying this exact same thing. He was saying that he keeps, they're promoting that the people in his state, and I wasn't paying much attention, so I can't tell you. I just think it was one of the Carolinas that, it wasn't Lindsey Graham, but it was someone I didn't know. That the people in his state, they want to prepare them for a biological, chemical, and or a nuclear attack. And I'm like, that's right out of the Methodical Illusion. And that's exactly what I read in that Israeli newspaper. And here I've got a U.S. politician. Well, we know that most of them are working for the man, right? That most of them are bought and paid for. And I'm thinking, does he know this plan is happening? That's why I decided to make my YouTube and hope that people share it, because if this starts happening, then people really need to understand that this was well planned out. And I mean, I read it. I read it in an Israeli newspaper.
Yeah. Without giving too much away, can you just say a little bit about what do you think happened to the passengers and the planes?
Well, what I did was I used the phone calls as a grounding, and I'd read everybody's theory about the planes going to Cleveland. And of course, the flight time doesn't work with the phone calls to Cleveland. It's an hour and 50 minutes from Boston. So I started looking at these things and I read other people's theories. But what I did was I found a flight calculator, and I teach the reader how to do this because it's right there. And if you go step by step with Jim and Vera, you're going to learn how I actually did this. And it's really good because it's how I did it, and it's how I tried to debunk myself. I mean, when I found this, I literally got physically sick. I couldn't believe what I sort of stumbled across. Methodically, I went through why the flight attendants wouldn't be following protocol for hijacking. Well, maybe they weren't being hijacked, I thought to myself. And then we had Betty Ong say, I don't know, we might be being hijacked. And I thought, if you're in a hijacking, you know it. Why would you say, I don't know, we might be being hijacked? And so I started seeing all these things and listening to and kind of charting out all of the details from those phone calls. And one of the things that really triggered me was when, of course, Betty Ong said he stood upstairs and there are no stairs on the plane. And then when she talked, a lot of them talked about sprayed pepper spray or mace having been sprayed. And just for those that might have missed our last chit chat about this, if you spray pepper spray or mace in a cabin that's pressurized, everyone's going to be breathing that. And those two flight attendants that were on the phone for 27 minutes, they never coughed and they never complained about having a hard time breathing. I think a lot of us now, since 9/11, have been involved in Occupy Wall Street and different scenes on the streets around the world where you've experienced some pepper spray mace or tear gas. None of it is easy to breathe through, and it's pretty painful to experience any one of those. So through those conversations and the things that were said, it led me to believe that that aircraft had to have been on the ground, no longer pressurized. And then I started looking through, where could they be? I drew a circle on a map from Boston, and then I got on the flight calculator from the other two airports, and I found the destination that later on I have been, this has been reconfirmed, that it was a reserve base for C-5 transport aircraft. Those are bigger than a 747. They're huge, actually, and they have really huge hangars on this Air Force base, or I guess it's on the Air Force base. And I've been contacted by people that actually were based there that told me the base had been evacuated the day before, and they were on lockout. They were called up active duty that morning and could not get on the base for up to 3 days, some of them. And now, after hearing an interview, they're telling me where that location was. So it's a very cool thing to go through. And I've never had anybody say, oh, that couldn't have happened. I mean, I have probably my biggest fans and book customers that are buying by the case of these books and handing out are American and United captains. Boeing 767 captains are guys that have flown the 57 and the 67 for both airlines involved, and they both have said, you have figured this out totally. Unbelievable. And they all knew the crew members personally. So, you know, it's not like they were faked. I know that some people that are non-airline people have really stepped out of the realm of reality and thought that those people were voice morphed or they were faked. They weren't really there, but they really were there and they really are dead.
Now, we all know about Larry Pullet Silverstein, but have you heard of the other guy who had the lease for the lower section called the Mall, who is in fact the CEO or former CEO of Westfield Shopping Centers Incorporated? Do you know about Frank Lowy and his connection to the IDF Golani Brigade?
Yeah, well, a lot of these people, including Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod and Lowry, a lot of these people go back to some of the early terrorist groups out of Israel. And he was involved with that. And keep in mind, he also was involved, or I shouldn't say involved. It's his shopping mall that was, where was that one that was it in Mumbai? I forget all the shopping mall bombings that happened with one of terror groups or the other. And he's kind of involved in a lot of stuff involved. I mean, he's not that he did it. I mean that he owned those shopping malls. So, yeah, he's definitely connected. But that's what you're going to find when you dig into all of these people. He was the partner for Larry Silverstein, and he's, I mean, they're all, I hate to say this, I got the synagogue connection. I mean, they're all connected through that one thing. And unfortunately, I didn't make them. I didn't hire any of these people, and I didn't pick their religion. I just found the connections to all of these people.
You describe in the book that it is much like an octopus. So you could almost describe these as being the tentacles of the octopus. Is that correct?
Definitely. And this infiltration has gone on. It's the Federal Reserve. Just it's one tentacle, maybe a leg. It's all connected. These people are involved with the MITRE Corporation. By the way, the guy who just became the Defense Department replacement for Hagel, Ashton Carter, he was the director for MITRE. And MITRE really is the shadow government. They're involved in everything from the IRS to healthcare. They run a lot of the new Obamacare stuff and collections and for the taxes and all that. They also are radar specialists. And remember, it was MITRE and PTEC that were in the FAA headquarters for 2 years prior to 9/11. This is the two companies that Indira Singh, who worked for J.P. Morgan Chase, tried to tell the United States Congress. They didn't want to hear it. Just like they don't want to hear the truth about any of this. Just like the FBI covering up the women I found involved.
Wow. Now, I do believe that cruising speed at cruising altitude, a plane can go about 600 miles per hour. On 9/11, we were told that a few hundred feet above sea level, these planes were still going that speed. Is that even possible?
Actually, the cruising speed for a 767 is closer to 530 miles per hour.
Beg your pardon.
At 35,000 feet. Uh-huh. And no, they were claiming that some of these aircraft were going upwards around 700 miles an hour. And they made some really nonsensical statements about the aircraft that, and no way, when you get closer to the sea level, the air is heavier. The airplane's not going to react the way it would if it were at cruising altitude. It's impossible to fly it at that speed that low. What they claim the plane did going into the Pentagon with a 270-degree corkscrew turn on a 757, impossible.
Wow. Okay. So in your mind, who were the masterminds of 9/11? Was it the Project for New American Century? Was it the Mossad, Larry Silverstein, Dick Cheney, or all of the above?
I think I'm going to choose for this test. I'm going to say E, all of the above. I think that there are a lot of guilty parties. I mean, everybody was involved. I believe it was Dick Cheney who changed the dates for the war games that were always slated to happen in October. The Vigilant Guardian and the Guardian Amalgam, and there's several of them. There was maybe a dozen that were going on that day across the country and in Alaska. I actually met someone that was based in Alaska. They almost took down a KAL, Korean Airlines 747, coming in from Asia. You go over the polar route, which is over the Aleutian chain, and your first city in the United States basically is Anchorage that you would come to. And they actually were told to toggle their hijack code 7500. And there was a lot of confusion because they didn't understand what was going on. And they were very lucky they didn't get shot down that day. They ended up landing somewhere like in Whitehorse, Alaska, I believe. I don't think they even went into Anchorage or they went into a military base up there. But it was quite the fiasco. And we're very lucky they almost accidentally got shot down for being told to toggle their hijack switch and their frequency. And then hey, we got hijacking. So there was all these drills going on. It created a lot of confusion. So I guess we're lucky that more people weren't shot out of the sky and crashed.
About the role that G.W. Bush had played, do you think personally he was too brain dead to have played his role convincingly?
That's a good question. You know, he always struck me as a just right, you know, fell off the peanut truck. But I don't know the man personally, so I don't know. But the whole, I guess maybe my opinion is that all of the presidents are sort of all Manchurian candidates now. I mean, they all work for the puppet master, and they're told what to say and when to say it. And maybe he was just picked perfectly to be that guy that fell off the peanut wagon, that we all just love this country bumpkin sort of guy or something. I don't know what that was all about. The thing that struck me so weird about him is when Andrew Card told him about the aircraft, the second plane going into the tower while he was at that kindergarten or grade school in Florida. And he sat there and the look on his face, if you look at that video, you know that guy knew this. I mean, he just looks like he's so guilty that, and the fact that by that time, I know I was watching it on television, and by that time, the television was telling us outside around the world that it was terrorism and it was Osama bin Laden. I mean, it didn't take him very long, because remember, Ehud Barak was over in the BBC studios telling us about the Solomon building collapsing before it did. And obviously someone had to tell Jane Stanley that and write it in her teleprompter. She reported Building 7 collapsed before it did by 20 minutes. So I think that what shocked me the most in looking back that day is that the Secret Service didn't pick him up and run with him, because they are there to protect our president. We were basically, I think everyone in the studio or the television audience was thinking, we're under attack. And why our Secret Service, who was there to protect our president, who was sitting out in public, didn't just say, Mr. President, we're leaving. And they waited almost 30 minutes or 35 minutes before he left that school. I think he left at 9:35, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, he stayed there for another speech, and it was kind of like the dog that did not bark. They didn't rush him out of there.
Mm-hmm. And that's very odd. I mean, if you think about it, I know what I was reacting. I was thinking, how much cash do I have on hand? Is my car got gas in it? I was living very remotely. What do I do to prepare myself for a war? Because I thought we were at war. And I was watching this. I thought somebody's obviously figured out our system well enough to avoid NORAD. That's our safety system. And then to attack the world's most protected building, the Pentagon. I went right into that mode. How do I prepare myself and my family for a war? Why our president and the Secret Service didn't do that only leads you to believe that they probably knew it was just a charade, an illusion.
Wow. A methodical illusion, in fact.
Exactly.
This is the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host for today, Steve Johnson, talking with special guest Rebecca Roth in part two of our fascinating interview. We'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit UNICEFUSA.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak. Every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You are listening to the People Speak Radio Show, coming to you live across America and across the world. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson, and we're back with our special guest, Rebecca Roth. Her book is available on Amazon.com or from her website called methodicalillusion.com. That's her website. You can purchase the book there or download the Kindle from Amazon.com. This radio show goes across the world live in everywhere, in every corner of the globe. And right now we do have somebody on the line ready to ask questions. I'd like to introduce Mr. Rock Cash. Are you there, Rock?
Yes, I am, Steve. Thank you for having me. Rebecca, just recently I've been listening to an RT report stating that elite forces, along with the Marines, Special Forces, everybody else, they're going to be doing some kind of operation within the southwestern states, seven southwestern states of the United States. I believe that we should all be getting ready for some kind of big false flag that the Israelis are trying to perpetrate on us. And, of course, the influence of martial law being put into place. What are your thoughts on that?
That's called Operation Jade Helm 15, and it is taking place. I believe they now have 10 states involved, and I have followed it a bit because I've been traveling, and I've been traveling in about 5 of those states. So I'm trying to plan where I want to go next because of these things that are going on. I've read some newspaper articles. At first, I couldn't find anything about it except for on blogs, and I'm always very cautious to get too excited about things unless I find it in an article in some sort of local newspaper, because they are talking about doing this involving some nighttime parachuting into our neighborhoods. It's going on from 11 p.m. till 4 a.m. when we're all trying to sleep, but we're not. The things that they say, I'm really keyed into conflicting statements. So they said, you won't even notice we're here, right? Because we're going to blend in with you, but they're going to blend in at 11 p.m. till 4 a.m. when we're all asleep through a helicopter. And if you've ever had a Chinook helicopter fly over you, you can't sneak in with the military helicopters very well, or Hueys or Chinooks. They're pretty darn loud, and at 4 in the morning, really loud, because you're not getting the normal traffic that's outside. So I actually read a few articles where some city councils were explaining to the people in their area what this was all about. One of the places in Utah I read in Salt Lake City area, or south of Salt Lake, I believe, in Salt Lake County it was, they were saying that they chose that area because they had a really good bomb squad in case something went wrong. And that was the trigger for me. I was like, okay, there's my red flag. And then, of course, you won't even notice this will blend right in. But being out at after 11 o'clock, well, let me tell you, I've been in Utah before, and at 11 o'clock, nobody's out. And people go to sleep really early in that state, pretty much. It's pretty quiet. And so I'm thinking, well, this is very weird. It, to me, looks like it is quite possible that that story I read in the Israeli newspaper about the anniversary of Osama bin Laden's death being celebrated by al-Qaeda in May, it could be this May. Now, the Shemitah, the deal that's coming down, and that is, I believe, coming out in like around the 18th of September, I believe, as some sort of Jewish holiday event thing. And it's something about judgment. I'm not really involved in figuring out all of their stuff, but I do keep an eye out on, for the Illuminati seems to work kind of hand in hand with some of the Jewish holidays, and you'll see that there's some correlation sometimes there. So I'm very cautious with the Jade Helm. It is now hitting the normal newspapers, and there's no excuse for it as far as I'm concerned. By the way, I've been to a military base where they actually have a fake Afghani or Iraqi village, little homes set up, and that's where they're supposed to practice. They're not supposed to practice with American homes and going door to door or any of that kind of stuff, whatever they're going to do. It's very suspicious. I advise people to be ready. For me, I'm thinking of not being in one of those states when it comes down. Myself, I mean, I'm very aware of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, some of us can't move out of the states before they get here. But in my notion, in my perception of this, is that they're getting ready to do something. I'm just hoping that there isn't a big nuclear blast or some kind of Israeli tactical nuke that they might use on us. We know they've been using them on Syria in different areas.
Yes.
So I just hope that doesn't happen here.
Yes,
I hope
that, and that's true. And what really troubled me, Rock, was when I heard that politician the other day. When I heard him say that he's preparing his
Mitch
state
Connell?
For, I don't know the guy's name.
North Carolina.
It wasn't someone I knew. I do know that Lindsey Graham character because I hate him so badly. I mean, I know he's really a shill for Israel, but this guy was someone I didn't know, and I was not paying much attention. I was kind of just flipped it on. I just wanted to kind of have an ear to the news while I was putting my Costco shopping away. And when he started to talk about being prepared for a biological, chemical, and nuclear attack, and that's what I read in this Israeli news thing. That's what I put in the methodical illusion. And that's what I had decided I have to do a YouTube to get this out. I'm hoping that, you know, people go to the YouTube channel for Rebecca Roth and spread that around, because if what they were basically saying in the article was this 9-day period, there'd be a day or two between attacks. So if you're at home and there's a chemical leak or a biological attack or some tactical nuke or something goes off someplace, I just know that for possibly for the next 9 days, at the end of that 9 days, we'll be under complete and total martial law. So maybe having these Jade Helm guys already in position, this looks to me like it might happen for the Shemitah thing, which is September 18th. And so a drill goes on until September 15th, except I read in Florida they were going to end it on September 11th. But that, I'm sure, it could change.
Right. And one last question for you, since you're an airline stewardess. Do you see any evidence of those chemtrails being let out of the commercial flights that you might be on, or regular passenger airlines, or
chemtrails is my next baby. I've got so much stuff that I've uncovered on 9/11 that no one else has yet, that I'm working a sequel to the Methodical Illusion, and I hope that's going to be out in about 3 months. And then my next baby is those chemtrails, and I am not flying anymore. I retired in 2004. I stopped flying, and to answer your question, now those were going on when I was flying. I flew mostly international 747. The only thing I ever saw was occasionally, because that aircraft is so big, from a door 5, which is the tail, very end, last windows that you can look out, you could occasionally see, if the temperatures were just right, the contrails starting to form. But other than that, I never in my lifetime saw anything that was chemtrail looking. Now, I am seeing them now from the ground, and that is one of the things I do want to follow up and get right to the bottom of. Who's paying for it, who's funding it, who the pilots are. They can't be drone aircraft. They're only flying between 20 and 24,000 feet, which puts them in a place where you can see them. And so the difference between a contrail plane and a chemtrail plane is oftentimes you're going to see a contrail. It's very short-lived, and they are real. I've seen them over the years. The contrail disappears right away, but the aircraft is somewhere around 30 to 35, maybe 38,000 feet. And so you can barely see the aircraft on a contrail plane, that you can see occasionally up there if it's real clear. If it's a chemtrail plane, you're seeing the aircraft. You can actually sometimes see it's got 4 jets or 2 jets. You can see the wings pretty well, and you'll see the huge difference. That's because they are flying between 20 and 24,000 feet. Now, the government would like you to believe that this is some global warming thing for getting into the stratosphere. The only problem with that is the stratosphere starts at 50,000 feet. So they are flying a little bit low for the stratosphere, like about 25,000 feet too low. So whatever they're spraying out is being sprayed out for a different purpose, and it probably isn't good.
Mm. Great. That was a great answer to my question. Thank you so much. Go ahead, Steve. It's your show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rock. You know, I noticed, talking about your YouTube channel, I noticed that President Sherman's Facebook page in the novel is identified with only a Stanford logo. Is that the reason you have a Stanford logo on your own YouTube page?
Yeah, I have that on my Facebook, too. And it's funny because I've only had a few people on Facebook that have gone over and actually said something to me. Oh, I must be in the right place. There's Joel Sherman, the Stanford tree. But, you know, and I got a lot of grief from the 9/11 Facebook people that really aren't about the truth. They're more about themselves, I think. But that I didn't put some kind of a banner on and put my face out there. Well, when I first dropped the book out in public, I didn't put my face out there for quite a while, until I just felt that I needed to validify myself so people could see me, and do some videos with some people that were doing video interviews. So,
sure.
But yeah, originally I wasn't. And it isn't about a banner. It's about waking people up and helping share the truth. I'm I have people on Facebook that think I'm a CIA agent. And like I tell people, if you do the math, I flew for nearly 30 years at the time of 9/11, which was in 2001. I had to be 21 years old to fly. And so if you do the math, and I haven't flown since 2004, get your calculator out, because this is high math now. I don't think the CIA is going to hire a grandmother.
And it should be more
about... It's flattering, though. I'm flattered.
Yeah. We have a question from Joe Biggs in Dallas. Rebecca, did you research the hijackers' dry runs? There was a very coincidental story from James Woods, the actor, who gave a story about unfriendly or obvious hijackers that he came across. Have you heard about that story?
Well, you know, it's interesting because most of the hijackers we now know are still alive. And we also know that most of them had at least one, if not several, sets of doubles. And Joe, in case you missed the show last week, or I forgot to tell you, Mohammed Atta, who we are led to believe is the ringleader for 9/11, was actually an executive platinum million-mile passenger on American Airlines. Although, according to the official story, he wasn't really even in the United States leading in the months leading up to maybe 6 months or so, and he was down in Florida mainly learning how to fly, according to the official story. He flew to a couple other countries and in and out on Czechoslovakian Air and Delta and some other airlines. And if you're a million-mile customer with American, you're going to fly American. And American flew all those places he went. He went supposedly went to Hamburg and to Prague and all these places. So what people think were dry runs, those people were not a part of this at all. They weren't in the wet run, so why would they be in the dry run? But we did have a lot of Israeli Mossad agents. 250 of them were rounded up and sent home right after 9/11. The 19 Arab hijackers were not involved with this at all.
Can you tell me more about the phone call from Mark Bingham? One of your specialities is analyzing these phone calls. What was so specifically interesting about Mark Bingham's call?
Mark Bingham, interesting. Mark Bingham is the guy who called his mother from Flight 93 and he said, "Hi, Mom, this is Mark Bingham." Now, how many people would call their mother and give your first and last name? I mean, I have to tell you, speaking as a mother, we know our children's voices, even if they're in tears. I mean, my kids can be having a total crisis, and they don't have to explain who they are. They don't even have to say their first name, let alone
their
first and last.
You believe me, right? Do you believe me? It's
yes,
me, Mom.
And that's another thing he said was, "You do believe me, don't you, Mom?" And I think that a lot of the callers I know called in. They said, "We're in the air. We're up in the air. We're in the air. We're on the plane." Cece Lyle said several times, "I'm on the plane. I'm on the plane. We've been hijacked." Well, of course you're hijacked or on the plane. Why would you say you're on the plane or in the air? Because that's where a hijacking takes place. And so, you know, those are those things that were those red flags to me. And they're like, oh, okay, somebody told him. Okay, make now. I'm sure that somebody told Mark Bingham, if he wasn't a handler, but if he just was making a phone call, make sure they believe you. But
right.
An interesting thing about Mark Bingham, I found out that he actually went to high school with Let's Roll, Todd Beamer. And that's kind of coincidental, too. Todd Beamer, another interesting guy. He worked for Oracle. He was in Rome on a little corporate vacation the week leading up to 9/11. And the week before that, he was in Israel. Let's roll. Hava Nagila.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go.
Let's roll.
You mentioned Cece Lyles. What was interesting about her? Because I believe she was some kind of first responder or in the emergency services before becoming a flight hostess.
Yeah, Cece Lyles was a flight attendant for about a year at the time of 9/11. She was a police officer, I believe, in Florida for 6 years. So she's well-trained in how to take care of herself, let's just say that. And, you know, she wasn't the only one. I believe on Flight 175, if my memory serves me correctly, there was also a gentleman that had been a police officer for either 14 or 20 years, and then he just got this wild hair to go be a stewardess. And so he went on and changed careers. But he had a long law enforcement career. And again, you know, people that are in that area, and a lot of flight attendants have actually taken because we travel alone a lot, we've taken self-defense courses. So people that contact me from United and American are, you know, kind of curious of, you know, if they knew they were in danger, he would have fought back or she would have fought back. So that's why we were led to believe that the, for those of you who missed this last week, that the flight crews, instead of being a part of this, were more than likely told that they were part of a drill. And that the two people that were needed for each phone call from the first three flights were taken off the aircraft. And at that time, more than likely, some type of gas was put in the aircraft, and the passengers and crew were gassed,
now, ending their lives. At the end of C.C. Lyle's phone call, there's something that really points to this being scripted. Can you tell us and share with us what that is?
Well, yeah, you know, Cece calls her husband, who is also a police officer, and he worked a night shift. And so this was at 9:47. She left a message on her phone recorder at home to say goodbye to him and her children. And when she was finished with this very heartfelt goodbye, and she obviously knew that she wasn't really being hijacked. She knew that she was going to probably not be living very long. And she starts to cry at the end of her phone message to him. She really loses it. I mean, you can tell that she's not going to be able to say another word. And then she hands the phone, and you can hear it. It's very much like if somebody's hand is on the speaker part of the phone, a ruffling sound where she transfers the phone. She doesn't hang up, and which would make sense because you wouldn't want to. And a woman's voice, you can hear a woman's voice at the end of that call say, "You did great." And this is 15 minutes before impact into Shanksville. The aircraft is coming down 6 to 10,000 feet per minute. Now, we just went through the German wings crash, so we know that plane was coming down not near that fast. But they think that was a real rapid descent on that crash. You see what happened to that aircraft. And of course, it did, you know, hit some pretty serious rocks there because it didn't disappear. We can see pieces. I saw actually the Lance part of the landing gear and a tire the other day when I was looking at some high-res pictures of that crash site. This woman says, "You did great." And I'm thinking, okay, now who is this woman? Where did she come from? And why would she be complimenting a flight attendant who is trained to be in control in a hijacking? She obviously wasn't on the plane. There was also no sound of jets really in the background on that call. And if your listeners want to hear that, it's actually found on the Wikipedia page. If you just search C.C. Lyle's Flight 93 and look for the little players, and you can find that. At the very end, you crank it up, you'll hear that woman's compliment. Mm.
Goodness. We have a follow-up question from Joe Biggs in Dallas regarding the million-mile member, Muhammad Attar. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that these million-mile travelers, especially pilots in training, are actually invited into the cockpit at any stage?
No, that is not possible. Sure as heck wasn't possible then, no. We have not allowed people to get into the cockpit for any reason in the air for many, 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 many years. I don't care if they have 6 million miles behind them, no.
I remember as a 10-year-old being allowed into a cockpit of a flight from Australia to Germany, and it was quite open. They used to let kids go in there all the time.
Well, Air France pilots drink wine in flight, but in America, we can't do that. The FAA doesn't allow that. You might see something like that. I doubt you would today, but when you were 10 was quite a while back, and foreign carriers weren't quite as strict as the United States carriers were.
Goodness. How did you come up with the name of the book, Methodical Illusion? Can you describe that for us?
Well, it was an illusion. The whole thing was a completely planned out, methodically planned out illusion. The whole event of 9/11 was an illusion. And, you know, if you just think about this, you know, somebody just sent me I've actually posted it on Facebook. So if any of your listeners are Facebook friends with me, holograms at a shopping mall in Dubai, and it shows these little children with their father and these holograms coming out of the floor. One is a Tyrannosaurus Rex. One of them is hippopotamus or a rhinoceros, and a couple dolphins flying through and diving into the floor. And it's all holograms in a shopping mall. And so if this kind of stuff goes on, I mean, I really... unless you're seeing it with your own eyes, you kind of have to know that Hollywood can make anything look like it's real. And so that's what I mean when I say an illusion, because a lot of this was an illusion. We were led to believe that these people were crashed into these buildings, but they weren't. It's just impossible. I mean, the flight attendants were asked, where are you? And they don't know whether they're over Manhattan, or the pilot, remember from Flight 175, he's like, I think we're over Ohio. He was 3 minutes before impact and in Manhattan. He's a pilot. He knows where he's at. His F-14 pilot, 175.
How have the book sales been going? Is it still up there?
Oh, it's been incredible. You know, about, 2 weeks ago maybe, I did Coast to Coast AM, and it goes all over and into the YouTube and all over the world. And so my publisher was absolutely overwhelmed. You know, I talked him into doing autograph books and helping me do that. I thought it'd sell 20 books. We're still way up on top in Amazon. I haven't even looked for a couple days, but it was up into the top number 17 and way into the top 20, over 8 million books on Amazon. So thousands of books are being sold all around the world. I'm doing autograph books internationally. For $30, just covers the extra postage off my website. And you just have to give us a phone call or email my publisher there. I can't process those through the store. But there's a new online store that's secure for orders in the United States, and the discounts are there for larger orders as well. 'Cause lots of people read it, and they say, what a great way to wake up people. Give me a dozen or two dozen. Yep.
Thank you very much for your time once again, Rebecca. It's been fantastic.
Well, that was a fast hour, wasn't it?
Sure was. It just went by so quick. You've been listening to The People Speak Radio with your host, Steve Johnson. I'd like to thank our guest and remind you to visit her website, www.methodicalillusion.com. Join us coming up soon with The People Speak Show when we interview Max Egan. Stay tuned for that one. Big thanks go out to the producers, both Mike and Donald, to my friends in the Pal Talk room, Earth Play, Suicide, Jane Blonde, Love is Light, Rock Cash, and all the guys who give me such support. Thank you to everybody from the bottom of my heart. Take care, and bye for now.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.